This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The trend is towards making it difficult for people to seek asylum, even by closing borders and pushing people away. Children separated from their parents, leaving psychological scars that will last a lifetime.
That's UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, at the agency's annual refugee conference in Geneva. Details coming up. Also, Melania Trump travels to Ghana today, starting her first major solo international trip since becoming the First Lady of the United States. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today, the annual United Nations General Assembly closes in New York, wrapping a particularly stormy session. Among the highlights, China strongly denied accusations from U.S. President Donald Trump that it is trying to interfere in U.S. elections next month. Iran issued equally strong denials of Israel's accusation that it was hiding nuclear weapons in Tehran. The U.S., which has pulled out of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, argued with the remaining signatories, Britain, France, Germany, China, and Russia, which still support the deal. While the major powers were feuding, African nations took an opportunity to seek support for their efforts to modernize economies and build peace. Zimbabwe's newly elected President Emmerson Mnangagwa promised new economic reforms in his country. Taban Dengai, South Sudan's first vice president, asked world leaders to support his country's new peace agreement. And Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi called for a new commitment for a political solution to Libya's civil conflict. As the 73rd UN General Assembly met in New York, its substantial development goals continued to be key to its mission. The global group Women Deliver, for example, contributes to those efforts with its Young Leaders Program. Since its inception in 2010, it has helped over 700 youth advocates for girls and women around the world build and strengthen their skills. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with two African young leaders Women Deliver invited to New York in connection with the U.S. General Assembly and its satellite events.
She wanna be a star, she wanna touch the sky, she wanna walk a little harder to be a number one.
That's the pop singer turned Women Deliver young leader William Otok of Tanzania singing his song Girls on YouTube.
This song that I did talks about giving girls access to education and contraceptives so that they can stay girls and not mamas when they're not ready.
Today, Otok works with the International Youth Alliance for Family Planning, a network for young people.
What we do is to build their capacity, support them with small initiatives in their communities, advocacy, community mobilization, sensitivity, gender issues, whatever they want to do, we are supporting them.
What is your actual work involved in a concrete level?
It's a lot of things. Policy dialogues with the government and policymakers, trying to like engage them and see how we can change policies, improve policies and programs that we can reach a lot of young people.
The group's work firmly aligns with several of the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, which include good health and well-being.
Our aim is to make sure that young people and women and everybody in general stay healthy.
Otok asserts that for youth, staying healthy also means being informed about sexuality and reproduction.
Young girls, they don't have enough information because sex is a taboo in most of our communities. People don't want to talk about sex openly, and so we see a lot of teenage pregnancies, we see a lot of unsafe abortions, we see a lot of gender-based violence, things like this. So our work is to empower people, and by doing that, we're not telling people abstain. We're telling people, do whatever you want to do, but you have to be informed to make the right choices. By empowering women with information and the power to make decisions on their own bodies, we're just giving them power. And once you give them power, then we can realize gender equality.
At 29, Women Deliver youth leader Dr. Juwani Bewa already holds a medical degree, a master's degree in public health, and is on track for a PhD. Bewa also teaches rural girls in her native Benin.
We talk about menstruation, how to take care of themselves as young girls, as young women, but also we talk about sexual intercourse and how to use a condom.
There must be a lot of laughs during that.
There are a lot of laughs, but a lot of interest because they want to understand.
Dr. Bewa is accustomed to the public spotlight. However, her activism stems from a deeply personal experience. When she and her friend were 12, her friend became pregnant, then died from an illegal abortion.
So at this moment, I start thinking about how can I just a little bit start to contribute to improve awareness. And after that, advocacy, and after that, bringing my work into the policy level.
In 2010, Bewa founded the Young Beninese Leaders Association, or YBLA.
It started with a march, a simple march with 300 people, and it became a big campaign throughout the world.
Recently, YBLA received a grant from the First Lady Michelle Obama Young African Women's Leaders Small Grant Program. Bewa parlayed the money into an education and advocacy effort that has touched the lives of some 3,000 girls in Benin. Bewa is proud to say that hers is a progressive country, open to change.
But I think we need to do more to make sure that there are more spaces and opportunities in Africa to support young women who are willing to put themselves out there. We have ideas and initiatives, but how do we sustain that? It requires a strong support system. Young people are passionate to push the UN agenda and to advocate for what is meaningful for us.
The work continues, as it must, according to Women Deliver CEO Katya Iverson, who adds, young leaders are not only the leaders of tomorrow, they are the leaders of today. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Melania Trump travels to Ghana today, starting her first major solo international trip since becoming the First Lady of the United States. The White House says her five-day trip, which also includes Malawi, Kenya, and Egypt, will focus on child welfare. That has been the center of the Be Best campaign she launched earlier this year. Ghana's Deputy Information Minister Kojo Opong Nkrumah says the program fits well with Ghanaian First Lady Rebecca Akufo-Addo's own program of promoting child welfare. Mrs. Trump's agenda on her first visit to the continent also includes maternal education and how the U.S. is supporting each country's efforts to build self-reliance. Her trip could be complicated by the actions and words of her husband. President Donald Trump has referred to Africa in vulgar terms and has locked up children and undocumented immigrants. The United Nations Refugee Agency warns that a rising number of people are fleeing conflict and persecution around the world at a time when more and more countries are closing their doors. Lisa Schlein reports from the opening of the UNHCR's annual refugee conference in Geneva.
This film shows a group of refugee children playing together, learning together. But according to statistics, the outlook for their future and the possibility that they will one day return to their homes is not very promising. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says global displacement was at record levels when he took office in January 2016. He says the number of displaced has since increased to 68.5 million, more than 25 million of them refugees. He says displacement crises affect nearly every region of the world, the Middle East, Africa, Central America, Asia, and even in Europe, in Ukraine. He says new crises with harrowing consequences are erupting, with the mass exodus of more than 700,000 Rohingya from Myanmar being a notable example. The High Commissioner tells delegates at the conference that neighboring countries largely have kept their borders open to refugees, though some have not. He notes most of the burden falls upon poor developing countries that host 84% of the world's refugees.
Yet, further afield, often in rich countries, the trend is towards making it difficult for people to seek asylum, even by closing borders and pushing people away. Children separated from their parents, leaving psychological scars that will last a lifetime. Refugees dehumanized, treated as a commodity, passed from one state to another.
Grandi says it is becoming increasingly more difficult to ask poor countries to keep their doors open to refugees when some of the world's richest countries are closing theirs. He says paths to solutions are becoming more complicated, but he says a few examples provide a glimmer of hope. He hopes the recent peace accord between Eritrea and Ethiopia will help solve the displacement crisis in the Horn of Africa. He notes the revitalized peace agreement in South Sudan, where more than 4 million people have been displaced since a civil war began in 2013. Grandi is also urging countries to recommit to accepting some of the world's most vulnerable and persecuted people for resettlement. He calls resettlement a limited but important solution toward easing the global refugee crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
16 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Rights groups in Cameroon are calling on the government to bring home migrant workers they say are trapped in abusive working conditions in the Middle East. The pressure comes after a video circulated on social media of 14 Cameroonian girls being held in Kuwait in what they described as slave-like conditions. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Samuel est aussi au courant de cette vidéo. Il faut nous aider.
In a video circulated online, a Cameroonian woman in her 20s calls on the country's football star Samuel Eto'o to help free her and 13 other women from a town in Kuwait. She says she does not know the name of the town, but says they work round the clock, do not eat well, and are beaten daily by people who call themselves their masters. The video shows the unidentified woman on a mattress on the floor, surrounded by other Cameroonian women who are sleeping. She says they were hired to work as housekeepers and hotel receptionists, but were forced to work months without pay. Some faced sexual exploitation. After widespread outrage in Cameroon, a spokesman for the Ministry of External Relations said the migrant workers had been rescued. He said they were under the care of the Department of Social Affairs of Kuwait. But Roger Tolum, who heads the civil society group Table de la Vérité, the Table of Truth, says he spoke to the women on Sunday and they described themselves as being detained in poor conditions.
Il faut faire quelque chose, Monsieur le Président de la République. Voici un cas précis.
He says Cameroon President Paul Biya should immediately help the girls and women and punish his ministers who deceived him last week by claiming they had negotiated for the migrants to return. He says all candidates for the October 7 presidential election in Cameroon should urge the government to bring back the girls and make it a point of duty to educate people to stop sending their children to Kuwait, Lebanon, and Saudi Arabia. Lydie Esesimba deals with exploited migrant workers at Cameroon's Ministry of Social Affairs. She denies the ministry has abandoned the women in Kuwait and says Cameroon's embassy in Saudi Arabia is negotiating their return.
Pour le cas de l'année 2017 à 2018, il y a eu 1300.
She says between 2017 and 2018, the government of Cameroon, the International Organization for Migration, and the European Union returned home 1,322 migrants. When they arrive in Cameroon, the government gives them psychological treatment because many are traumatized from torture, rape and hunger, says Esisimba. The government also gives grants of up to $4,000 to some of them to start businesses, she says. Cameroon estimates there are at least 1,000 of its citizens working in the Middle East, where migrant worker exploitation is common. In 2015, 50 Cameroonian migrant women were rescued from abusive conditions in Kuwait. Shortly after, Cameroon announced it would soon open an embassy in Kuwait to better assist its citizens on the ground. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The United Nations envoy to Libya, Ghassan Salami, has said that it will be difficult to hold elections in December following new fighting in the country. Libya remains divided. A UN-backed government of national accord is based in Tripoli, while a rival administration in the east enjoys support from Egypt, Russia, and the United Arab Emirates. In neighboring Algeria, citizens have been protesting over the failure to enact political and economic reforms. Rami Khoury, professor of public policy at American University in Beirut, talks with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the persistent instability in North Africa.
Libya is like many other Arab countries that have suffered warfare and tension and state collapse in the last 5 or 6 years, mainly because of the initiation of military violence, both by the state and by some opposition groups and by international parties altogether. And so what we're seeing is in countries like Libya, the state was never really very strong. It was just autocratic and top-heavy and brutal. But once the leader was taken out, the state structure collapsed, and we found out that there wasn't a state structure. So what you're seeing now is just a free-for-all where essentially tribal groups and families and criminal groups and some groups funded by other Arab countries or foreign countries are all fighting for a little piece of the cake, and somebody grabs an oil terminal, somebody grabs an oil field, somebody grabs a highway and imposes tolls. And it's just a free-for-all where different groups are fighting to gain a foothold and make some money. At some point, somebody is going to have to bring all these people together to reconstitute a state. But that hasn't happened yet.
Would Algeria witness a belated Arab Spring following the latest disposal of top military leaders by President Bouteflika?
From what I read, and I follow it closely, and I talk to a lot of people who are experts, what you've seen in Algeria in recent years has been hundreds and hundreds of small-scale demonstrations at the community level, and the state has always put them down by essentially paying people off and meeting their demands at a local level. So my guess is if fundamental opportunities don't improve for the majority of people, especially younger people without jobs, then you could have an uprising. Of course, it can happen anywhere. And if Algeria doesn't see an economic improvement with a little bit more justice so that the wealth is spread more evenly, then we can expect serious problems ahead. What kind of problems? You know, street demonstrations, uprisings, trying to overthrow the government, who knows? But definitely the conditions are not sustainable when you have a situation where there's more and more young people without jobs and more people who have jobs who can barely make ends meet.
Why there was a completely different outcome of the Arab Spring in Tunisia compared to Egypt?
Several factors. One is the role of the military. The military in Tunisia did not try to keep Zine Abidine Ben Ali in power. Second one was the role of the labor unions and the organized social movements that worked together very effectively to bring about a transition. And the third one was the role of the Muslim Brothers, the Nahda Party in Tunisia, that took power, and they were able to make concessions and make compromises, make agreements that allowed the transition to happen peacefully. The Muslim Brothers in Egypt were less sophisticated, less conciliatory, more greedy, when they got power democratically, they tried to change the constitution to stay in power forever, and people reacted against them. So those are three or four reasons that we can immediately see, and there's probably others that will come out with history.
That was Rami Khoury, professor of public policy at American University in Beirut. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Violence against women and children is once again in the spotlight in South Africa, where two recent cases have residents outraged. In one incident in Gauteng, a six-year-old child was raped in a restaurant bathroom, and a woman in Eastern Cape was raped in a hospital by a man pretending to be a doctor. The woman had given birth the previous day. Many South Africans are now demanding the government take a much tougher stance on the perpetrators of sexual violence. From Johannesburg, Nadia Same has the story.
The South African Police Service records on average 110 rapes each day. That's according to the police's latest crime figures. But this is by no means an accurate reflection of the country's sexual violence rate, as rape remains one of the most unreported crimes in the world. Dumisile Nala is the CEO of Childline SA. She says there are multiple issues that fuel the problem.
South Africa has a history of violence. We are challenged with unemployment, substance abuse, and a sense of when children are abused, nothing really happens about it. If there are cases that go to court, they take for a long time to be processed or for people to get the final outcome of the cases. And there's a sense of communities don't really feel that they can trust the system to report the matter and that the matters will be handled accordingly.
Portia Tupe is a mother of two. She's deeply disturbed by the constant reports in local media of children being molested or murdered. She says she spends a lot of time worrying about her children's safety, but has no choice but to leave them in the care of others while she's at work.
The only thing that I can do is to teach my children, don't speak to strangers first, and secondly, know your body and love yourself. I doubt that South African police and the government are doing enough about it. Around my area, there's a police department where they have security on the gate. So I was imagining myself, how could they have a security at the gate while there's a police station here? So surely in South Africa, we are not safe. And for my children to be out there, even though I'm at work sometimes, but I fear for my children because sometimes they are playing on the street, it's in location, and you cannot even trust anyone in the neighborhood.
South Africa has a ministry dedicated to women and children. But Minister Batabile Dlamini is yet to issue a statement acknowledging the two latest incidents in which a girl was raped in a restaurant toilet and a teenager was raped in hospital. Earlier this month, Deputy President David Mabuza said in Parliament that South African men must change their ways to stop the scourge of gender-based violence. Childline SA CEO Nala says it's time for all citizens to play their part in bringing about a safer environment.
The children within your family home, are you talking to them? As a community, if we say the street lights are not working, there are bushes all over. What are we doing about that? If you see a neighbor's child being sent to a shop at late in the evening or at night, what is my sense of responsibility towards that child? So it's really all spheres of our society. We need to look at what we can do to ensure the safety of our children.
Childline SA is encouraging parents to talk to their children about their bodies, consent, and speaking up when they're uncomfortable. For parents like Portia, it's a conversation she wishes she does not have to have with her five-year-old, but one she now realizes is unavoidable. For VOA, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
Hey, sports fans. Brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.